Join me as I highlight small businesses in the craft industry with interviews on-site at distilleries, breweries, and more. This podcast is all about getting to know the people behind the craft, celebrating their hard work, and of course, having a few samples along the way. Welcome to Crafted Conversations. Braden, how's it going?
Well, very well. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thanks for having me here at the distillery.
Yeah.
McClintock in Frederick, Maryland. Tell me about yourself, how you got into the line of business.
Yeah, so I have been, I was thinking about this the other day, it made me feel really old, but I've been in and around the alcohol beverage industry for over a decade now at this point.
Wow.
So I used to do some work for our national trade organization when I was young, trying to learn as much as I could from people, did an apprenticeship, did a lot of brewing back in the day. And now, 7 years tomorrow, we will have started our own shop, which we're very excited about.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about McClintock. How did that start?
Yeah. So so me and my business partner, we actually met in college. We're both from Maryland, but we had known each other for a really long time. And we had known each other because we both would do some home brewing. We were both very into the industry. And when the laws started to change in Maryland, we thought that there was a huge opportunity to get something new going that really restored the heritage and the history of what we had going on here in the state. Because it's a really cool and unique history, and it's been kind of forgotten about. So we really wanted to open up McClintock as a blend of history and cutting edge technology to make truly authentic Maryland style spirits.
That's neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I've learned more and more as I've traveled around that Maryland is one of the unsung states.
Yes.
In not just bourbon, but whiskey across the board.
Yeah.
So I'm sure being from Maryland, there's a little bit of a personal pride here to showcase.
Absolutely. There is. There's, you know, I'm sure you've interviewed some Marylanders who are very proud people. and definitely like the more and more, you know, I knew Maryland was a hotbed for rye, but the more and more we did research into the history here and met other Maryland distilleries and shared some cool resources, realized how deep that goes. And like, you know, a lot of the Kentucky industry can trace its roots back to this state. Here in Frederick, Jacob Beam, who's Jim Beam's father, had his first distillery here in Frederick.
Oh,
most people don't know about that.
I didn't
know that. It's on the Jim Beam website. And we were just like astounded by that, that like, you know, a lot of that early corn-based whiskey also has its roots here, you know, particularly on the Eastern Shore. But it really is like a forgotten about history that's fascinating.
Yeah. So you have your this is your seventh anniversary.
Yes.
And I'm sure it's been a trial and error. but part of the reason why I like talking to people like you is because you have kind of the freedom to trial and error. So tell me about that. You know, you're here, you're at the distillery, you're hands on. Tell me about that and what makes it, I don't know, click.
Yeah. We really love having our own shop. You know, we've been in around like larger productions and, you know, a lot of it is like, you know, it's more like a manufacturing plant. Same thing every day, make sure the flavors are the same, consistency is there. What we wanted to focus on when we started our distillery was really delving into a lot of the varietals of grain that's here. So we work with small organic farms to grow a lot of very unique and heirloom varietals of corn, wheat, and rye, particularly because we saw that as an avenue where the large-scale distilleries really don't do anything. They have a taste profile, they get genetically modified grain because you can buy it by the ton and it can be grown all over the country and has the same flavor profile. But being small and working with small growers, we really have a lot of leeway to try brand new stuff, which is really, really awesome. And even for our core whiskeys that we make all the time, we use three different heirloom varietals of corn, wheat, and rye that really give the flavor profile a very, very different, profile than what you might find with a macro produced product.
Yeah, I was going to ask too, that kind of rolls into, you know, how much of that actually informs the flavor and quality of the whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that too, I mean, we were telling me off mic, that I mean, your focus is sustainability, working with local farms, mm-hmm. doing what you can. So tell me, how does that Is there a point of pride for you that brings some quality to the whiskey?
Yeah, 100%. You know, we see that, you know, that quality transcends. It's, you know, you can make a good product. Like I love a good macro produced whiskey. They're great. But if you're looking for something that's unique and different, that all starts with your raw materials that you get in. And, you know, you can create flavor from the ingredients, how you ferment, how you distill, how you barrel age. But I usually describe it as like you're making a painting, right? And if you start with a bunch of different colors, you can do a lot of unique things on the back end. But if you're starting with one color, you're limited on what you can do. So by starting with these heirloom varietals, we have a totally different set of fusel oils and aldehydes and all these interesting things that we can do special stuff with on the back end to create some really one of a kind flavors.
Yeah, I bet. And I'm sure too, you've found some experiments you can play with.
Yes. Winners and losers for sure. Yeah.
Well, so when you started the distillery, were you a whiskey person? Were you looking for something like, what's your baby? Or you're like, I'm going to go make a good bourbon, or what was your plan?
So me and my business partner, both really liked whiskey. You know, my first love was Irish whiskey, and then that opened the door for bourbons. And now most of what I drink is rye. I really love rye whiskey. But back when we were first starting, gin was really something that was interesting to me. I was really, really into gin, still am very, really, very much into gin. I love gin because it has a lot more variables to it than a lot of other spirits. So when we're dealing with, you know, rye and bourbon, there's a lot of constrictions, for lack of a better word. You have to use corn 51%. It has to be distilled at 160 proof or lower. It needs to be in white American oak charred barrels. You know, there's a lot of prescriptive elements to a whiskey. And that's why I think it's beautiful in whiskey, because it's about subtlety, right? You make those changes with the types of grains and fermentation. It's small changes. But gin, the changes are limitless. You know, it has to have some flavor or essence of juniper, but you could do a coffee gin or a chili pepper gin, or like ours where we're aging in Madeira and cognac barrels. Ooh. And you can really make some products that are just like, you know, there's not a comparable thing to compare this to, which is really awesome. And why I love gin is because it really like opens the door on what you can do.
Yeah. Well, I told you off mic too, that I one of my favorite things is coming around to places that are making whiskey and probably selling a lot of whiskey, that they also make a really good gin.
Yeah.
And I'm not a gin person, so I'm excited to try your gin, but
yes.
I'm kind of curious too that, you know, Maryland has this rich history with whiskey that obviously you've discovered. You live here, you've been raised here, but do you find yourself tied to honoring only that history, or have you branched out and said, you know what, we're going to make something just wazoo wild?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's kind of both, right? Like we definitely want to, like our Bootjack rye, it's a historically inspired mash bill. We're using varietals that are very tied to this region. We're really trying to be as authentic as possible with that. But, you know, the beauty of being a small distillery is we can plant these varietals that honestly have no business growing in Maryland. They would not have been able to grow this, you know, 100 years ago, or some of these newer varietals that are more like bakery centric that we're doing as like specialty release products. So it's that marriage of, you know, honoring the people that came before us, but also trying new stuff and trying to kind of discover and blaze new trails for future distillers.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. Well, what should we start with? We have some samples here. I'm getting thirsty.
Yes. I think we should start, since we're talking about Maryland history, with some ryes here.
Okay, perfect.
If that works for you. So I have, I'll start you with our flagship rye, which is our Bootjack.
Okay.
And this is, like I mentioned, a historically inspired mash bill. I'm sure if you've talked to some other Maryland distillers, there is not a lot written down about the actual process and mash bills of what made a Maryland rye. So, you know, we have the flavor profiles. We know that Maryland rye was typically a little bit sweeter than a Pennsylvania style rye that wasn't quite as peppery or spicy. And I've heard theories as to why that is, from the mash bill to the type of rye that was being grown to guys telling me that it's because Maryland used to put prune juice in our rye whiskey, which I'm not super sold on quite yet. But we wanted to kind of honor that flavor profile by using this Danko rye, which is a bread making rye. It's an heirloom varietal. It's not that black pepper spice bomb that you get with a lot of rye whiskeys. Ours is much more fruit forward. It's very soft. It has a ton of nuance to it.
Okay.
I love the nosing on it.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's a very, very fun rye that I think is probably, you know, as authentic a Maryland rye whiskey as we could possibly make.
Ooh. That's very good.
Yeah.
And did you say that there was 100% rye? What's the...
So this is 75% rye, 20% wheat, and 5% corn.
Ah, that's okay. That's the wheat.
And that mash bill we put together, there was a distillery here in Frederick County in Burkittsville called the A. Horsey Distillery. And it was one of the biggest distilleries in the country in the 1800s. And unfortunately, during Prohibition, a mob came down of evangelical people, and they burned down the whole distillery and all of the rick houses, and they never got back up and running. Of course, there was nothing written down about what the mash bill actually was, but we sat down with some folks from the Burkittsville Rurton Society. They're very older gentlemen whose grandfathers or fathers worked at the A. Horsey Distillery.
Oh, wow.
And they, from what they remember, like, there was definitely corn in it. There was probably some wheat in it, and it was high rye. And so based on that and some of the agriculture data at the time, we put together this mash bill, which is 75-25.
That's very unique.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see many places that are using that much wheat
yes.
in a rye.
Yeah, that's definitely... You know, here, particularly in Western Maryland, we are big dairy.
Mm.
So a lot of farmers would grow wheat and then hay and use that. So that's why we feel fairly confident that there was probably some wheat going into the whiskeys back in the day here.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I'm also, so when it comes to bourbons, I'm a high rye bourbon fan.
Mm-hmm.
I love rye. I love the spice. I'm not a big fan of a lot of ryes that try to be spicy just for spice sake.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good, well-rounded, smooth, like just that sweetness coats your tongue
mm-hmm.
with that nice little rye spice at the back.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's certainly like we usually pitch the rye as like, this is a great, super approachable rye,
yeah.
right? If you want like a spice bomb, like, you know, punchy rye, this is probably not the one for you, but it is like, it really encapsulates like that classic Maryland rye flavor, we think, which yeah. is cool.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
So what should we move to?
So I'm thinking maybe we do our bourbon okay. next, and then we'll finish with some special release whiskeys here.
Beautiful.
So the Bootjack and the Matchstick are our two flagships. These are ones that we make all the time. We try to keep them in stock year round as best we can. But this one also has that historical connotation. So like I mentioned, you know, Jim Beam, but also like Four Roses, Basil Hayden, a lot of those brands tie their history here.
Mm-hmm.
And what we had found from some documentation is a lot of the first corn whiskeys were probably like corn. They were truly probably like four grain whiskeys where like corn was a part of it, but also wheat. Maybe some millet, maybe some other stuff that they were growing. So we wanted to do something that was kind of closer to that vein. So this is exactly 51% corn,
okay,
30% wheat, and 19% rye.
Wow.
So yeah, high rye in there. The corn we use is a yellow king corn. Which doesn't tend to have as many sweet fusel oils as you get with like a lot of the Kentucky Dent corns that they use down there. So our bourbon is definitely a little bit darker, a little more earthy, a little more wood forward. That wheat content gives it a super mellow finish to it. So just a very, very gentle drinking bourbon for sure.
Well, cheers to that.
Yeah. I need to pour myself some. I forgot.
Oh yeah, that's that wheat really takes over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a super clean finish, and we think this really encapsulates probably more the Eastern Shore distilleries. That's where a lot of the corn guys were pre-prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's very unique, and I think kind of special to this area here.
Yeah, you're not wrong about earthy,
mm-hmm.
and that's not a negative connotation at all. It's very, very I don't know what the right word is. I guess grassy, or mm-hmm. it has a really unique agriculture taste to it.
Yes, for sure.
But
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's a very tasty one for sure.
So tell me about the aging on these two. These are your flagships. Mm-hmm. So tell me about the aging and how much of that was a learned process.
Yeah. So we were, you know, fortunate to come into this industry with a little bit of experience under our belt. So we kind of knew what our mash bill we wanted to do. We were very insistent on making everything ourselves. So we never did any sourcing or anything like that. So we put them in 30-gallon barrels, so a little bit smaller, so a little bit faster wood extraction, but still long enough time to get those reactive mechanisms going. So the bootjack, when we started, was between 18 months to 2.5 years. Now most of it's coming in from 2 to 2.5. It seems to be the sweet spot with those 30-gallon barrels. The bourbon, it's a straight bourbon right away, never harvested anything less than 2. Most is coming in between 2.5 and 3.5 for those. So we try to blend, you know, we're a small producer, but we try to blend at least 6 to 8 barrels at a time. So we get consistency from batch to batch of what we're doing.
Did you, when you first started, I know you weren't obviously selling your aged spirits yet.
Yes.
Because it takes time. It's an investment.
Yeah.
Did you find yourself chasing the cash register a little bit in the beginning, or did you have to, you know, build up some stock?
Yeah, we definitely the first year, you know, we took a line of credit to secure our equipment, but we didn't have super deep pockets to do anything else. So we basically looked at it as we were selling like private events and weddings. We were like, all right, every wedding we sell, we have enough money to put down three barrels of whiskey. So we'll keep doing that. So our first year was really like, you know, we might have had enough to put it down like 20 barrels, give or take. But still to this day, gin is our best seller and we move a ton of gin. So by year two, we were able to put down, you know, closer to 100 barrels. And now we're pretty much at max capacity and we do somewhere in the ballpark of 250 to 300 barrels every year.
That's incredible.
So hopefully we can get some bigger equipment in here soon and we can increase that number because our distillers work really hard and I can't make them work any harder than they already do.
Well, speaking of special things, I mean, yeah. You've been able to expand a little bit. I'm curious about this one.
Yes. So this is to celebrate our 7-year anniversary tomorrow. This is our Old Etzler Bottled and Bond Rye Whiskey. So this is a 5-year.
Ooh.
This is in 53-gallon barrels. This is from Kelvin down in Kentucky. So, you know, medium char, classic Kentucky style bourbon, barrel here. And this one is like a bottle and bond. It's 100 proof. It's really dark, whereas the bootjack is definitely, you know, it's got a lot of those fruit notes to it. This one has a tremendous amount of barrel, less of the vanilla and caramel and more of those really nice, like tobacco-y leather notes in it.
Is it the same mash?
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Same mash bill, distilled quite differently. So we distill these two specifically for going in those smaller barrels. So they're distilled on the higher end of things. This one was distilled low and slow. It was intentional to be a 5 to 6 year whiskey.
Gotcha.
So you can tell it's like definitely got a lot more flavor to it, which is nice.
Yeah.
But still, like that Danko rye, it's soft. It's not a super punchy rye. It still has that nice mellow finish, even for being a little bit higher proof.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah.
Did you said this is a 5-year.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a discovery or was that the plan? How did you come about 5 years?
We knew. So, I always tell people, it's like we always put it in with like an intention. So we're definitely not of the mindset of like, all right, we'll throw it in the barrel and we'll check back into it, because, you know, I believe that you should make the product to age a certain way.
Okay.
Like, you know, we definitely are distilling cleaner for the younger products and more dirty for the older products, because, you know, you have more time to mellow it out. So this one was like 5 to 7 was our target in this. But we popped it open and I was like, this is really good as it is. And rye in particular, I find is very like gets good and bad and good and bad. And we, I think, caught it when it was like on a really, really good spot. And so we're like, let's do this. This will be our release for this year. So, you know, we do try to be fairly intentional with the age time for these.
That's awesome. It's very methodical.
Yeah. We have some single malts that I wrote on here because I was like, I don't want to tempt myself, but I put 11 years. And I said, don't come back to this for at least 11 years. So,
I guess that's a good tee up to the next. My curiosity is, you know, you have this special thing that you put away for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's bottles or barrels you squirreled away that mm-hmm. said, you know what, we're gonna put that over
yeah.
here.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely, you know, it's hard as a small distillery to be able to do that, but there's definitely products that we're just, you know, because see where it goes.
Yeah.
More for personal enjoyment probably than a business decision. But yeah, especially like those more like malty, you know, single malt style whiskeys, I find are really like don't start to get really super interesting until, you know, 7 or 8 years. So
yeah,
hopefully they'll be good.
Yeah, I'm sure they will be. Well, and you have the freedom to do that.
Yes.
And that's, I mean, have you thought about, I know we're going to move from whiskeys, but I'm kind of curious, have you thought about doing any kind of like cask finishes or collaborations with local place breweries or any of that stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely have started to play around with some cask finish stuff. We do a really cool program for liquor stores where our single barrel program is very strong and we do cask strength for most of those. So we've never released one here. But we've done like cognac finished bourbon and Madeira finished rye and some really interesting things that different liquor stores have picked out, and the products have been phenomenal. I'm hoping in the next year or two we'll have enough stock of the bootjack and the matchstick to do more limited release stuff.
Sure.
But for right now I gotta keep all of them for people who need these ones.
That's so fair. Yeah. I mean, being small too, that's part of the game you have
yes.
to play.
Yeah, absolutely. Just balance what you got.
Right.
And speaking of collaborations, I do have one more. Technically it's a specialty spirit.
Okay.
But I would say whiskey would be the most comparable thing to put this in. So,
okay.
So this is a collaboration with a local brewery called Monoxy Brewery. They're here in town. They make a stout that's really, really tasty, and they had some extra 1 year, and we distilled it into a product, released it at 2 years, and it was very good. I liked it a lot. I was like, send me another one that's not just like the extra of a batch. Give me the real mash, and we'll distill it and put it away for 4 years. So we did that. That's this product.
Oh,
it's super interesting. The hops really turned into this like almost like jalapeno bell pepper like kind of savory herbaceous flavor, and
yeah.
then it's a dark malted barley, so it is chocolate, espresso, really, really dark grains here.
See, I love malted, that chocolatey
yeah.
espresso.
Yeah,
oh my goodness.
If you like a Scotch or Irish style whiskey, this is probably the closest thing we've done to one of those so far.
So because you're distilling that mash,
mm-hmm.
it's not classified as a whiskey.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So why it's not a whiskey is because there is hops added to it. And to be a whiskey, it has to be 100% made from grain. So
right.
because there is this quote unquote impurity in it. Yeah. It's a specialty spirit. I think we called it a stout spirit is what we called it.
Interesting.
But yeah, aside from the hops, it's basically a malt whiskey.
That's fun.
Yeah.
See, and that's the kind of thing that I love to discover, because you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Yeah. That's the beauty of being small. And this occurred because one of their sales reps was my next door neighbor, and I would always trade him gin for some bottles of this beer. And so he knew it when they had extras, they were like, oh, I know somebody who would take all this and do something interesting with it. So it's that community, especially that we have here in Frederick, that's amazing. It's really awesome.
Is that an ongoing release you want to keep going, or
mm-hmm.
very cool?
Yeah, we'll continue doing this. They make a rye beer that's a pretty dry, like hop forward beer that we distill into a spirit as well, which is super, super good. It's called Riot Rye, which we're sold out of now. But we do that as a every other year release. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
That's there. And are you just using a charred barrel for those 4 years?
Yep. Yeah. These are the same barrels we're using for our bootjack and matchstick, 30-gallon medium char new cooperage barrels for those. So you get those kind of more classic whiskey flavors to them.
Yeah. There's a little bit of hoppiness to it, but mm-hmm. I wouldn't have, in a blind tasting, I would have thought that was a whiskey.
Yeah. And it's definitely like, if you tried the other one, which is a very hop forward one, you'd get it. But it's interesting because it's not that bitter, like that really dry, bitter flavor that you would expect. It turned into this really like fruit forward, like really aromatic note, which me and their brewer have still been trying to figure out what exactly we created from that. So we'll figure it out one day, hopefully.
A little bit of a science miracle.
Exactly.
You had mentioned that you have a science background.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about that.
So I went to college for environmental science with a focus on biology and chemistry.
Okay.
I worked at a lab before I got into the alcohol industry. And while I was starting to get into the alcohol industry, so we do a lot of focus on making sure that we're bringing a lot of the same standards you get in the lab to what we're doing. Which has been great. So I'm sure a lot of my guys are bored of me spouting chemical nonsense to them, but it really helps, you know, keep that consistency as we're going through it.
I was
going to
say there's probably a pretty good translation of skills and knowledge.
That, yeah.
I mean, because distillation is chemistry.
Yeah, 100%. And we do a distilling class that's really, really fun. It's like a very intensive full day hands-on whiskey distilling class.
Oh, wow.
So we get people come in at 9. We mill mash a whiskey that day, and then we do 2 distillations of a rye. And so people can taste and try and like really understand. Like, it's basically a mix of being there hands-on and seeing and learning what's happening. And then we have a classroom portion where we talk about the chemistry that goes into it. Say, oh, you tasted banana? That's isoamyl acetate. And we created that because we have a limited oxygen fermentation. And, you know, we get a lot of people, both just enthusiasts and people who are looking to start their own distilleries, come through. And it's a really good way to figure out, like, do you actually want to do this or not? I've unfortunately probably turned more people away. They're like, wow, this is a lot of work to be a distiller, is true.
And then so after the people who come through that threshold, then you show them the business side.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Said, all right, stick around after for TTB compliance. And nobody sticks around for that. Yeah.
Oh, I know. That's the one thing that's been fun for me, too, is learning about all the different laws that exist across the states.
Mm-hmm.
So I told you off mic, I'm born and raised Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I moved to Virginia. Different world.
Mm-hmm.
Maryland, I know, has some odd laws, too.
Yeah.
Has that been a little bit of a learned experience, or has that just kind of been easy to traverse? And
yeah, I will give Maryland credit in that they had a lot, when we started, a lot of the laws were basically like prohibition era rules that really didn't make sense. They weren't applicable to distilleries, you know, of our size. Pretty much everything was built because Maryland had so many distilleries. The laws were built for big distilleries, for Diageo's and, you know, Suntory's and stuff. And so they created this new law to allow craft distilleries. It's a new license for producing under a threshold. It's a, you know, it's not $60,000 a year, which is, you know, we can actually make that work. And we have had a really strong guild. The Maryland Distillers Guild has been amazing. We're one of the first members of that. I'm currently got suckered onto being on the board again this term. But we have had a really good opportunity to change a lot of the laws to encourage new distilleries to open up and help the existing distilleries, because, you know, a lot of the stuff that the state is looking at, like, we're an agriculture-based business, and a lot of the traditional agriculture businesses in Maryland are struggling right now.
Sure.
The water, you know, the watermen, a lot of the dairy that's out here on this side of the state. And so they see value-added agriculture as the future, and they've done a lot to really kind of help our industry. Now, they could absolutely do more. I'm not saying they're perfect, but definitely talking to some distilleries like down in Virginia and up in Pennsylvania, like, have a lot of struggles, and we're fortunate that Maryland at least sees a path forward for our industry, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, there's been an exponential boom in craft distilling in the last, I would say, probably 10 years, maybe even 5 years, but it's been fun to watch this kind of, you know, this breakout, especially as a whiskey drinker. It mm-hmm. gives me more options. but do you find yourself struggling with the, you know, setting yourself apart and telling your story and saying, you know, this is, you know, oh, another bourbon and rye. Ooh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, like, that's probably the piece of advice. We get a lot of new distillers or aspiring distillers come through for the class or just to, like, check it out. We're always down to, like, help people, you know, and give them advice. And that's probably the biggest thing I always tell everybody is, you know, have something that is really easy to explain to somebody why your stuff is different.
Yeah.
If you're just like, you know, I'm another MGP sourced rye whiskey and my price point is about the same as the other MGP sourced rye whiskeys, like you that never will like get there. And the more and more distilleries open up that are doing cool and unique and interesting things, it's gonna be more challenging for people like that to continue. So, you know, we built our distillery with a lot of these very specific kind of differentiating factors in mind, with the organic certification and the varietals we're using and the stone grinding of our grains, a lot of that stuff. So we've had some good success, but that's probably the biggest piece of advice I offer to new distilleries. Like, find something that you can, you know, hang your hat on to set yourself apart.
No, I think that's important. Yeah. I mean, even if it's just, I mean, you specifically, you were born here. You love sharing the culture. Yeah. and the history of Maryland.
Yeah, absolutely.
That adds to the flavor.
Yeah. Yeah. This is cool. It is, you know, history is such a good story, and people around here, all of the distilleries in Maryland have really compelling and interesting stories about what they're doing, which is cool.
Yeah, for sure. Well, shall we try some gin?
I think we should. So I'm going to start with our Forager gin. This is still our most popular product that we make. This one is probably, out of all the things we've tried, they took us the longest to really dial in this recipe.
Okay.
Because this is really a showcase of our vapor infusion chamber and utilizing new recipes and new production methodologies to make a very unique flavor profile. So this has 21 botanicals in it. It's Appalachian inspired. So we use a lot of botanicals that are native to this area in Western Maryland. So it has this really like wild, woodsy, bold and herbaceous flavor to it that is probably like, I describe it as like the Mack truck of our gins. You can put this in any gin cocktail or drink it on its own, and it really, really shines through nicely.
Oh. Yeah, see, as a non-gin person,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't taste like gin, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
But it's also gin.
It is. You know, I think that's really like what we always try to do with all of our gins is, you know, there's enough there that you know that it's a gin. It has some of those familiar notes that you're looking for, but all the rest of the notes are new and different. You get citrus and floral and spicy and a lot of really cool things going on, which is really neat.
Yeah, that's a very, very, very citrus forward gin.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah. And all three of our gins, I'll keep going while we're talking about gin here. All three of our gins, you know, one thing in the early days of craft distilling that I saw a lot while I was out and talking to people is, you know, a lot of times there'd be like, well, we have three gins and it's all kind of the same gin, but we, you know, maybe this one we added honey to it, or this one we aged in a whiskey barrel, or whatever it is. And so we wanted to do something a little different. So all three of our gins are completely different botanical bills. They're made for different end uses. So, you know, some of them are made for sipping, some are made for cocktail mixing, some are made for martinis, some are made for gin and tonics. It's really, you know, depends on what you like. So this one, the Gardner's Gin, whereas the Forager is quite bold, very flavor forward, the Gardner's is really delicate. It's super light. It's like a floral and citrus forward gin. So this is like hibiscus and lavender and rose hips without being too perfumey.
Yeah.
Three different citrus peels. And then this one, we short age in Madeira wine barrels for about a month. So just a little bit. We wanted that body of the red wine without being too sweet.
I was going to say there's a little bit of color on it.
Mm-hmm. But it's super delicate. A lot of those more like modern American gin cocktails, people will pick this one up for.
Oh, it's very different.
Mm-hmm.
Very floral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's those really modern styles of gins. This is really kind of fits into that category as well.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And save my favorite for last. This is
this one has the most color.
Yes.
So I'm curious about
this. Yeah. So this is really cool. This blends. When we launched this, I was going through a bit of a brandy phase and drinking a ton of brandy. Originally, when we were first talking about the distillery, we were going to do whiskey, gin, and brandy. Love brandy. And once we did a little bit of probing and talked to some local retailers and restaurants, they said, we will never buy an American brandy from you. So I think it's so good, but it's just the market is really tough for it. So we did this one, which is, it's a botanical forward gin aged for 2 years in XO cognac barrels.
Oh.
So it has like right on the front end, it's very brandy forward on the front end. It has some of those sweeter fruit forward notes. And then we made this very savory gin botanical mix to close it out. So it's rich. This one is almost 100 proof, so I'll have a little bit more heat to it. But it's really intended when we made this, like, this is a sipping style gin. It's really meant to be enjoyed on its own or in a cocktail that really showcases it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't use this in a gin and tonic. It's really intended to be really showcased on its own.
Well, you're not wrong though. That nose is just, that's just brandy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super, super cool. And the year we released this, we sent this to the International Spirits Competition and we won double gold and was best gin and show that year for this one. So we were very proud of that.
Oh, wow. That's one of the most unique gins I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Super good. What cognac is it?
So when we started, we were pulling Hennessy just because that's the one that we could get.
Sure.
But now we buy direct from Maison Fron. So these are Maison Fron XO barrels that are really, really good. We've been very, very happy and lucky to get those, which is cool.
Oh, man. That's so unique.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious too. So have you thought about trying to do a brandy just because?
We've done. So we've, in the past, we do like small, like limited releases. They're part of our, we call it the innovation series that are definitely like weirder products that we just kind of came up with. And they're like, some of them sell really well. Some of them don't sell very well. We did a pear brandy that's probably like, if you look at what Maryland made in the 17 and early 1800s, probably made rye and pear brandy. We're probably the two biggest things made here. And we have an amazing organic orchard in Jefferson, which is about 10 minutes west of here. And he grows pears, all heirloom varietals of pears and apples. And he has a cidery and it's really, really good. So we worked with him. We did a pear brandy, an apple eau de vie. We did some other apple brandies that we put away. Single barrels, you know, small releases. But yeah, it's, I love a good brandy. It's just hard to make work like as an actual product. I think
business plan.
Yeah. I think American brandy, like 10 years from now, I think American brandy could be a thing, but it's a huge uphill battle and we have enough uphill battles with gin. So
yeah,
yeah, we'll stick to that.
So Wisconsin is known for being the buyers of a third of Korbel's out of California.
Yeah.
Obviously, everyone knows Korbel.
Yeah, yeah.
The brandy old fashioned is Wisconsin.
I've had one before. I was in one of the lakes up there, and I had it. I was like, this is super unique. That's a thing up there.
A lot of snobs who like, you know, a traditional old fashioned kind of like, oh, this is
great.
I love it.
Yeah.
I'm biased, but but there's a lot of distilleries in Wisconsin are making brandy, and they're kind of on the coattails of, well, it's Wisconsin, it's brandy. And so I am curious what the market does, because right now the market is kind of consumed by bourbon and some craft gin. Rye is starting to tick off a little bit, which I'm really excited about because I love rye.
Yeah.
But yeah, with the craft distilling, I mean, craft brewing, craft wineries, everything's just kind of blowing up. I'm kind of curious to see what happens.
Yeah.
So hopefully you can do some brandy down
the
road.
Fingers crossed. If we had more production capacity, we'd definitely be putting down more brandy. For sure, because it's so fun to make.
The one thing I've noticed too is that you're one of the few distilleries that has. Do you have a vodka?
We do have a vodka.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you want to taste it?
No.
It's a 100% organic white wheat vodka. It's distilled to 95% purity. It's just a very smooth and clean vodka, but
yeah,
it's a vodka.
Have you played with that at all? Have you done any kind of flavored vodkas or different infusions?
Yeah,
or?
We have. Yeah, we can try a little bit.
So, I didn't know if you brought it. I didn't want to make you walk across.
I got it here. So this is super unique. I really like it a lot. I wasn't sure how many products you wanted to try today.
I'm not driving home.
Yeah.
I am.
Yeah. So this is called our Oro Vodka. So this is, we use the gin basket to infuse in fresh sliced cucumber and lime zest.
Oh.
And then we age it in añejo tequila barrels for 1 year.
Okay.
So this is like, it's a very unique product. I people are always like, well, what do you compare this to? I don't know. There's nothing really like this out here. So it's like, you get those esters from the tequila, you get that freshness from the botanicals, you get that smooth finish from the vodka. It's a really cool one. But definitely one of the weirder things we've made.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I make a good cocktail.
Yeah. Yeah. They're very fun. The Oro is one of our most popular for bars and restaurants. They're looking for like unique building blocks for their cocktail program.
Sure. So what would you consider your baby? What is the thing that you are most proud of making, the thing that you have most fun making?
Probably the Reserve gin. The Sipping Gin is probably the thing I'm most proud of our core products. The Old Etzler that you tried is probably my favorite thing we've made to date. That one is really cool. And I think like our core mission of like restoring that heritage and history of Maryland spirits, I think that's probably the best representation of Maryland rye that we've done ever, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it was delicious. I think that's my number one so far at the table.
Nice.
But yeah, that I will say that gin and Madeira is really broke my brain a little bit.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. It's one of the Gardner's Gin is one of our fastest growing spirits. So that one we did 3 years ago, and that has been growing faster than any of our other products right now.
Well, kudos to that. That's really fun. Yeah. So my last question, I always love to hear the different answers.
Yeah.
Are there anything experimental or fun or things you've squirreled away that you're looking forward to down the road that you can divulge? Any, not secrets, but have you put a barrel away that's like, this is going to be in a sherry cask for 12 years?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say probably like the longest term project. We have like a pretty classic, like Irish style, triple distilled single malt that is probably 7, 6.5 years right now. That's the one I'm not trying to touch until we get to 11 years. That's half for my dad, 'cause he was the one who got me into with drinking whiskey, and that was Irish whiskey. The one thing after this can be experimenting with, we're making like a Eastern European style, like Slivovitz kind of type thing, which is like a pear brandy, except for we're infusing it with some botanicals and honey.
Oh.
Which somebody brought me back this thing from Serbia while they were over there, and I was like, this is cool. It's really unique.
Yeah.
So we're messing around with it now. It'll probably be another one. Like, we'll do 100 bottles of it for weirdos like me who like stuff like that. And then that should be enough for everybody drinking Slivovitz around here.
That's fair. I mean, you have a beautiful core line. You're busy enough as it is, but once in a while, those fun little side projects turn out to be something really
good.
You got
to keep yourself engaged. And so you're not just, you know, it's no fun to just do the same thing every day for sure.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm sure that's part of probably the most fun part of your job is
you
wake up and say, you know, what if I put that in this?
Yes. 100%. 100%. And it's the best job in the world. We're super lucky to be able to do this every day.
Yeah. Well, congrats on 7 years.
Thank you.
And I appreciate your hospitality and sharing what you have. It's I'm a fan. So
nice.
I'll direct my wife here for some gin.
Wonderful.
She's a gin person too.
I appreciate you coming out and trying all our stuff.
Of course. Well, yeah. Braden, cheers to you and to McClintock, and I'll be back. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd appreciate it if you left us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. The more reviews, the easier we are to find. Also, if you aren't already, be sure to follow us on social media so you never miss any of our updates. Be sure to share this episode with your friends, and always be sure to drink responsibly. There are quite literally thousands of distilleries, so we're just getting started. Stay tuned for more conversations with master distillers, distillery owners, mixologists, and even bar owners, and more. Cheers.